This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It is a terrific honor to welcome live into this studio Gerald Baliles, former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia and now the director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs, online at millercenter.org. It's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks very much.
Absolutely. We want to talk today and spend some time, and we want to invite listeners to join this conversation, about a subject that has certainly grabbed your attention and to which you have devoted your leadership and your resources to put together a study group, which we want to talk about as well. And that is the interplay between media and democracy, media, newspapers, information to an educated citizenry, and governance, and how each sort of depends upon the other. There's so many places we could start here, but I think the best place to start is, when did you realize that this was really on your radar, that this subject had become front burner for you, and that you were absolutely committed to exploring this issue?
I think, like most people, I try to pay attention to what's going on around me. And like a lot of people, I believe that a free press is vital to our democracy. That's how we get our news. It has been a part of our history. It's a part of our consciousness. But given the current state of the newspaper business, I share the concerns of many people about the future of the free press, the media, and especially about the potential impact that this could have on governance of our country. The question is, how will our leaders act if there are fewer journalists covering their activities, their committees, their organizations? And how will our citizens inform themselves when there is less reporting on the issues? And will the new emerging forms of the media be able to fill the void? So reading stories over the last couple of years about the failure of newspapers going bankrupt, stock prices dropping to rock bottom levels, it began to cause me to ask the question, okay, I understand some of the business model reasons why newspapers are beginning to fail, but what's the impact on governance? When you look across the board, you will see that a lot of papers are eliminating foreign bureaus, so they're no longer covering foreign capitals. We no longer get the depth of news that we used to get about international activities, at least through the newspapers. At the state level, there is a great diminution of coverage of state capitals. Many newspapers across the country no longer cover state capitals. And at the local level, the concern has been that local papers cover strictly local and in some cases, in very small places, become boosters of their communities rather than reporting on what's going on in their communities. So across the board, from the international to the national to the state and local levels, there have been many questions raised about the future of the loss of journalism. Let me just give you an example.
Sure, sure.
Since 2008, from the year 2000 to the year 2008, about one-third of all the journalists working for newspapers were eliminated from their positions.
A third?
A third. And about that number is something like 10,000 in the number, one-third. So you have to raise the question in your mind, what's the impact of that? I mean, we understand the economic impact on the newspapers, but what's the impact on governance? So those are the kinds of things that caused me to raise the question within my friends across the state and with the faculty and staff at the Miller Center. Should we not be concerned? Should we try to identify the trends identify some of the issues, and then see if we can identify what people are talking about as potential solutions.
We're talking with former Governor Gerald Baliles, director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia, about the media and governance. The phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. Give us, if you can, let's go back to the beginning and just the whole idea of the media and the founding of this country, because it truly, you can read Jefferson and you can see, I mean, read any of them, you can see that this idea of educating and informing the citizenry is embedded in the very idea of America from the very beginning, yeah. Not only in the press, but in, that's where the University of Virginia comes from. We need to be constantly educating the new generations so that they can participate in leadership positions in governance in their communities and in the nation.
Well, in the early days of the settlement of North America, most news traveled by private letter. If a citizen in colonial Virginia wanted to communicate with a citizen living in Boston, that person wrote a letter that went by ship to London and then by another ship to Boston and back. So I think in the early days of the Republic, the founding fathers were strong believers in the need for an educated citizenry. They wrote a free press guarantee into the Constitution. They created the U.S. Post Office and generously funded it, making it almost free to ship any political handbill or newspaper throughout the colonies and throughout the states. So they had a strong belief in that. And what is very interesting is that just a generation or so later, in 1831, as I recall, the post office accounted for 76% of the government workforce, and there were more postmasters in this country than there were soldiers.
This is 1831?
1831.
That is amazing.
So it gives you some indication.
The post office is three-fourths of the national government.
in 1831.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because, you know, it was a means of distributing communications among the citizens of this country that was obviously included private letters, but more importantly, perhaps, it meant the wide distribution of news through newspapers throughout the early states.
And that, of course, we're talking with former Governor Gerald Baliles. The phone number is 977-1070. And that, of course, as any student of history knows, only became more and more important as newspapers became more viable commercial enterprises.
Yeah, and you know, we shouldn't overlook the historical changes in the news media. There was, at the beginning of the 19th century, the emergence of the partisan press. Newspaper editors were also party leaders. They wrote for and informed people of their particular political persuasion. And that reigned up until the mid-19th century, when the advertising model began, when you had newspapers beginning to bundle segments of news, international, national news, sports news, obituaries, whatever you wanted, you could find in a bundled set of papers. And that model prevailed even up until until recent days, although the model of objective investigative journalism began in the around the turn of the 20th century, roughly.
And ultimately, isn't that really what we're talking about? That is the point of concern: the enterprising, intelligent, hardworking reporter who's going to do tough stories and ask tough questions of our government, whether it's local or state or national. That really is the key here when we're talking about what will be the impact of the loss of the media on governance, right?
Well, the media will still be with us. It's the changing media that we have to talk about. What has happened, just as newspapers drive so much of the news coverage for radio, television, even the internet, newspapers bundled news. The internet has unbundled the news. so that you can go on the internet and read whatever you want to read whenever you want to read it. You're not dependent upon someone else aggregating a collection of news stories for your benefit. You can decide what you want to read. What you miss in the process is accident. If you want to read a sports story, you might, in an earlier age, your eye might fall across a story that you weren't expecting to read and totally surprised you, informed you, perhaps motivated you to do something. That is gone when you are able to self-select the news you want to read. And increasingly, it is shown in studies, or at least that's what we found in our work, was that when you go to self-selecting the news, you basically look for opinions that comport with your own views, so that you don't necessarily look for ideas that compete with your own opinions, but you look for things that tend to reinforce your own opinion.
So you tend to consume the news that makes you feel like you're right.
Correct, which in some cases can help drive polarization.
Yeah, it tends to drive people to the farther to the left and farther to the right.
And what it also does, though, it drives down the newspaper model that we have been talking about, because the internet then draws viewers away, draws readers away from the newspaper. So subscriptions decline. Classified ads can be free on Craigslist or Monster Jobs, so that the newspapers get it coming and going. They lose subscriptions, they lose advertising revenue, and so they are struggling to find their place in this changing world. Some try to go online and put their news online, but that they don't get revenue from that. You go online, you don't expect to pay for it. You go to a newspaper stand, you expect to pay for it. So, you know, the newspapers are in a dilemma. And so our study group began to look at the changing role of the news reporting, news gathering infrastructure over time, going back to the 5th century, to the 15th century, to the 17th and 18th centuries, and up until the recent day. There's been roughly a transformation of the news media field about every 50 years, give or take a few decades. But
it's always been changing, right?
So here we are now in this changing world, and there are a number of policy proposals that are out there being discussed, but none solve the problem of ensuring a news-gathering infrastructure that will continue to provide the news that will engage and inform citizens.
Don't put off till next
week.
So
we're really talking about production of news and consumption of news. And whatever the media form might be, somebody has to produce it in order for someone to consume it. And we're in a period of transition now, and we're not sure where that will lead us.
We're talking with former Governor Gerald Baliles. He is now the director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia, online at millercenter.org. For folks who are not familiar with the study group that you put together to study this issue, give us the background on this group when they met and who was involved.
We started meeting last year, and we continue to meet, but the report that's being referenced is an interim report. It's to identify the issues and to give a hint at some of the solutions that people are talking about. But we had people from Pew Charitable Trust. They have a journalism project that is well-respected. We had the former executive editor of the Washington Post. We had the publisher of the now-defunct Rocky Mountain News. We had people from the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission. We had representatives from Congress and experts in the field from different universities and colleges around the country.
Is everybody on the same page that there's a problem, that yes, the media changes, but that the changes we're seeing now potentially have a tremendous impact on, you know, on governance and on, you know, a less educated citizenry, and what we were talking about earlier about how the way the news has become unbundled, we have the potential to see more polarization than perhaps we've ever seen.
Well, the one real concern is, how does the news get gathered and then reported in order for it to be consumed? We talked about consumption. A much younger generation gets its news online. A more older generation will still prefer the newspaper. Some do both. But the newspaper's role of reporting on the news really filled two functions. One was the issue of accountability, of constantly going to committee meetings of Congress or the state capitol or city government, covering committees, watching for violations of Freedom of Information Act requirements, or checking lobbying disclosure forms.
That watchdog function.
Sure. And so that's an important role that the press has always played. The second role is providing news that will inform citizens on a wide range of issues, so that these concerns that are being discussed can be placed in context, that there's some understanding of how the issue arose, what the issue is, what the options are, what may or may not happen, how it will be financed. So the press over time has really produced a very vital role for itself, serving as a watchdog and then informing the public. That requires you to look at all of this in two terms as well, and that is the production of that news and then how it's consumed by the public. So this transition period that we find ourselves in really is a very difficult one, because when you lose a newspaper, or when you lose reporters who work for a newspaper, you lose something more than the tactile feel of a paper. You lose people who were accustomed to identifying issues and covering them for the general public. And when you lose one-third of the reporting force in the country over a decade, that ought to raise some red flags in our minds. What about the governance?
Darrell Beliles is the former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. He's now the director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs at the University of Virginia. We'll take a quick break here at the bottom of the hour and continue this conversation in just a few minutes. We got 21 minutes in front of 6 o'clock here in Central Virginia. My name is Coy Barefoot, and this is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. We do it every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 with the absolute guarantee that you're going to get home a little smarter and have a good time doing it. It's 81 degrees here in Central Virginia. We're looking at isolated thunderstorms tonight and then possibly clearing. Darrell Beliles is a former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, now the director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs. He joins me live in studio, and the phone lines are open for you at 977-1070. We're talking about the media and governance, the media and democracy in America today, and the implications of a crumbling economic business model of much of the traditional media, the implications for governance in America, and what this means in terms of educating the citizenry. Let's start, if we can, by talking about something you raised earlier, the watchdog role of the media and of reporters and of really good reporters. You instantly think of Watergate and any number of stories that have been brought forward. And when we're talking about, you know, in the last few years, that a third of reporters in America have lost their jobs, and that means that not only are we losing these great watchdog reporters, but we're also losing the younger folks who could have been great watchdog reporters and have had great impact on improving democracy in America. And it's just a terrific unmeasured loss. What are your thoughts on this, about what's happening and what we could possibly do about it?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, the press in this country has had a dual role of serving as watchdogs of government at all levels, and then the second role being that of providing information that can produce a more informed, educated, and engaged citizenry. As far as the watchdog role goes, our political system has depended upon that kind of coverage throughout our nation's history, but there's probably no better example, recent example, than the Watergate reporting of the Washington Post reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. More recently, we have seen investigative series of stories by the Washington Post on the abuse of veterans at the Walter Reed Army Hospital. 60 Minutes and the New Yorker magazine are well known now for revealing the prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison at Guantanamo.
PBS Frontline does terrific work.
The Wall Street Journal revealed the financial abuses of Enron early in the decade. The Virginian Pilot here in the Commonwealth detailed the government's reliance on private military personnel or private companies to do military work in Afghanistan and Iraq. So that kind of information serves a very useful role in holding government officials accountable. So that's been a traditional role, and it continues. The question is, will it continue if the traditional role of reporting and investigative journalism diminishes as a result of the collapse of the economic business model of newspapers?
We're talking with Gerald Beliles, director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs, about media and governance. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. Talk a little bit about what really are the implications now of the, you know, when we lose newspapers. Newspapers have traditionally provided sort of the crux and the keystone for media coverage in other forms. You know, the TV guys would sit down in the morning and read the Times and the Post and the Wall Street Journal, and then they would come up with the nightly news, and yep. And radio does it as well. So what does this mean when we talk about that the economic business model that has supported this keystone of our news gathering and of this entire infrastructure is crumbling right before our eyes?
Well, there are a couple of things. A bit of interesting information we came across in our study was that 25 years ago, which wasn't all that long ago just for some of us, 75% of the people watching television viewed one of the three nightly news networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And over 70% of the homes in this country took a daily newspaper 25 years ago, right? 75% watched one of the three networks every night, and 70% took a daily newspaper. Today, by 2010, the ratings of the three networks plus Fox, four networks now, went down to 20%. Only 20% of the American homes are now watching the nightly news on one of the four networks. And interestingly enough, newspapers were something down below 20%. So, and 25 years ago, the most trusted name in news was Walter Cronkite. Today it's Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. So you can see changing habits, changing consumption of the news. But clearly, how news is produced affects how news is consumed. And the production of news traditionally through the newspaper model is changing. And how news is consumed is also changing as technology changes the way we live and work and consume products and news and other things.
I have a friend who subscribes to a number of Twitter feeds, so she'll grab her iPhone, and with just the scrolling down very quickly, she can get news from a number of sources within seconds.
When she wants it.
Yeah, whenever she wants it. Right. She just picks up her iPhone and says, I want the news of the day from around the world. Boom, it's right there from a number of sources.
But you can also self-select the news. You can say, I want news only about Ireland and no other foreign country. You can say, I want news just about one sports team. You can select the news you want. You can select the political views you want, so that what you're doing is compartmentalizing your view of public affairs, events around the country, around the world. And that raises the question of how does that affect the way we govern ourselves? How does it affect the way we elect our people to represent us, the way they debate the issues, the way that we make decisions as a society, the issues that we consider important? As I said at the outset, our purpose was to try to identify some of the trends. And the interim report alludes to some of the policy proposals that are being discussed. I don't think they really address or fully address some of the concerns, but some of the interesting proposals are covered in our report.
You know, one of the most disconcerting things for me personally is to see the talk radio model being taken to cable television, and most notably with Fox News, so that you don't get news, you get people talking about the news, and you just get opinion. And younger folks coming up are marinated in this, and they start to think that, well, this is what public discourse is. It's being incredibly opinionated, very divisive, very uncivil, yelling over one another, and you don't learn the key things that a democracy, people who participate in a democracy have to learn, and that's civil discourse and compromise.
Well, the when the newspaper model changed back in the late 19th century, in the early years of the 20th century, you began to create this professionalization of the news, is what it was generally called. And that involved a set of ethical standards, objectivity in the reporting, close editing for factual accuracy. And that generated a set of news articles. You know, your editorial pages could opine about their views, but the straight news was supposed to be about fair, objective, accurate reporting.
Just the facts, ma'am. Yeah.
Just the facts. When you go to news shows now and it's more opinion without the facts behind them, that really does raise questions about what people are consuming. They are consuming perhaps strongly felt views that may be honestly held. But if they're not factually based, it raises questions about the consumption of that bit of news.
That's what I was going to say, is they could be strongly held views based on no facts.
Right.
Gerald Baliles, he's the former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs, and the interim report of the study group that explored this very issue is available at millercenter.org. What's the timeline now? The group continues to meet?
It continues to meet. One thing I might mention is that some of the newspapers with their reduced budgets, reduced staffs, continue to experiment. For example, right here in Charlottesville, the Charlottesville Daily Progress has created a partnership with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Right, right.
A group that deals with growth and infrastructure issues. And they collaborate on some stories that give Charlottesville Tomorrow a greater audience, and it gives the Charlottesville Daily Progress greater content for their papers. There are a few experiments like that going on around the country. The Knight Commission has endorsed the idea that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting ought to expand its mission to encourage greater coverage of local and state issues, but that would require an act of Congress as well as additional funding. There are other proposals about encouraging citizen journalism through blogs and Facebook and Twitter and the other social media. But that raises questions, again, about accuracy of information, objectivity, and how that news is presented. In the coming months, we will continue to convene groups to think broadly about some of the suggestions. But my guess is we're looking at 5 to 10 years before this picture becomes a little clearer than it is now.
Gerald Baliles is director of the Miller Center of Public Affairs, former governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the man behind this study group exploring the media and governance in America today. It's been a real honor to have you on the program.
Thanks very much, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.